All right, we're recording then.
We are indeed.
Hello, I'm Simon Mercier, and it's time for another edition of Crave, New Zealand's sixth most influential podcast about music, films, and anything else. It's been keeping me and Steve McCabe amused recently. What a claim that is, Steve McCabe.
I know, we've striven for this. Striven. And those dizzy heights, we are now officially the sixth most important podcast.
You'll explain in due course, I'm sure.
Shall indeed. Now, this week we're going to look at The Jungle Book, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And also, we've both been to see The Jungle Book. We've also both been to see this latest installment of the Marvel Universe. This is Captain America Civil War.
Indeed. Now, the music opportunities I was hoping for this week didn't quite present themselves. But Simon, you've been enjoying some new music lately, haven't you?
Yeah, well, new for me, because I'm just showing my age here, Steve.
Yeah.
Because you know, I'm my mid...
Yes, exactly, your mid.
Exactly, my mid-ish.
Yes.
And so there was a band that came to town just a while back, which clearly extremely well-known for a younger audience. I'm showing my ignorance here, not so well-known for me. I'm talking about the American... A duo, actually, called 21 Pilots. I went to see them at Vector Arena, and I thought they were fantastic. Now, you say you haven't been to see much music, but did you catch anything of a cultural flavour when you just have returned, have you not, from Tokyo?
I was indeed in Tokyo for about a week, and no, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see anything while I was there. Things tend to be very expensive, In terms of entertainment in Tokyo. Going to see films is a bizarre experience. You don't buy a ticket at the cinema. You buy a ticket. You can buy them at convenience stores. You can buy them at ticket shops. And you buy a ticket for a film. And then you show up at a cinema that's showing that film, and they'll let you in for that film. And so if it's a popular film, any given showing will likely be oversubscribed. And so you'll queue up outside the cinema waiting to go in. And I remember from many years back going to see, I think it was Fight Club.
Right.
And I had my ticket for Fight Club, so I showed up at a cinema in Shinjuku, and I waited, and I had to queue up outside the auditorium. Now, most Japanese people don't understand English, so it doesn't matter if the sound leaks out. You can't read the subtitles from outside.
No.
I heard the last 20 minutes of dialogue before I went into the film.
Oh, no.
So going to the pictures in Japan can be a somewhat disappointing experience, and I didn't bother.
Hey, were you... back in the day when you were a young lad in Salford,
and
you went to the movies, I wonder whether you did what we used to do when I was a kid here in New Zealand in this colonial outpost as it was. Do you know that at the beginning of a film, we all had to stand up and stand for the national anthem of God Save the Queen?
No, that used to be at the end of the day. That would be at the end. At the end of the day's performances, I remember... Then you had the little pin board on the wall, though. They push in the letters just to give you the running times for the films. It would always have at the end, like 10:30, the Queen. And they would always do the national anthem at the end, at the end of the day's celebrations.
We served her up to begin with. Isn't that interesting, huh?
Absolutely. I'm glad to see a bit more respect from the colonials. That's good to see. It's what we expect.
Yeah, well, that was then. It doesn't happen anymore. Anyway,
this place has gone to the dogs, hasn't it?
We've gone to pot. Hey, we both did see, not at the same time, but we went to see The Jungle Book.
Yes.
What did you make of that?
Oh, dear, this was always going to be difficult, wasn't it?
I know. You're talking about that the spectre of expectation.
That's the one. That's a very good way of putting it, because this was one of my... This was my childhood. This was my favourite Disney film from years gone by. I mean, it was released the year before I was born. We're talking about the original cartoon, of course, here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just part of my background growing up. You know, it was always there. And so when my daughter was born, that was one of the first things that we got on VHS video.
Right.
And I relearned the songs all over again and learned to love them all over again. So that was in the back of my mind walking in. That's what The Jungle Book was.
Mm,
mm. And it took me about the first half an hour to let go of that.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, but did you let go in the end?
Well, you have to, don't you? I mean, how gorgeous, how beautiful was this film?
It was a stunning piece of work, and the visuals were. It made me think of all that massive amount of work that must have gone into Avatar, Yes. Where they just created a completely new landscape. Well, they did the same here, didn't they? Just incredible. Technologically and the artistically, gosh, just amazing. And it's a kid's movie, but, you know, some quite genuine heart-stopping moments of adventure and action with, you know, tigers taking a swipe at people and everything. I mean, they did really, really well in that regard. I saw that it was 1967, I think it came out.
Yes, it was.
I thought that was a fantastic film. It had, and like you, that stayed in my memory. The characters they came up with for that early-ish Disney film were great characters, great interpretations, and they stay with you for a long, long time. In terms of what worked really, really well and where I still hankered back for the old ones, I thought, first of all, I thought Shere Khan in this film was very good. I thought Idris Elba's voice worked really, really well. Bill Murray as Baloo, what do you think? Pretty good. I'd still kind of like the old Baloo, I have to say.
Phil Harris will be forevermore the definitive Baloo.
Yeah.
Bill Murray was lovely. I mean, I know that the character's meant to be relaxed and laid back. There was a degree to which he was phoning it in.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with you. I wondered what it was. There was something about it where I just didn't quite feel it from that character. But I thought, and I actually thought, as I say, I thought Shere Khan, Idris Elba was great.
Yes.
Bagheera, Ben Kingsley, not quite for me. Not quite as much as the old one.
No, I mean, I hate to come down on a Salford lad. He grew up just down the road. He lived on Half Edge Lane when I was on Stafford Road. Lovely bloke by all accounts. But no, again, I think part of it is these are not people who need to be voice actors. They are very, very. I mean, especially Bill Murray. He's a very expressive physical actor.
Yeah. True.
Same's true of Ben Kingsley. I mean, he's got a very distinctive face. His mannerisms are very strong part of his performance. When you abstract out just the voice, you lose a lot of their performance, I think.
True, but someone whose voice is distinctive, and for me anyway, worked really well, was Christopher Walken as King Louis.
Now, that was a bizarre performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was bizarre, kind of manic, but it cut through all the CGI that made me sit up and take notice.
Yes. As soon as I heard his voice, I'm thinking, no.
Oh, really? Okay.
It is. What? And it took me a while to accept the fact that they've got Christopher Walken in The Jungle Book. This does not make sense. I mean, you might as well have had Quentin Tarantino directing it. This did not make sense. And once I'd managed to make the mental shift and say, okay, I can get on board with this, then I liked it. But Christopher Walken's King Louis had the single most ill-judged moment in the entire film, in my opinion.
I think I know what you mean. You mean the song?
The song. Now, I took my wife, my mother-in-law, my daughter to see this film, and we dissected it in the car on the way home. And one thing that Debbie pointed out was Bill Murray's Bare Necessities was simply a character singing a song within the story. And it made sense that as they're floating down the river. I mean, first of all, he didn't sing it, did he? He recited it.
Yeah.
I mean, again, not Phil Harris. The guy just spoke it, but it made sense. That's what he was doing. And he was
kicking back.
He was kicking back. He was kind of teaching the song to Mowgli a little bit.
Yeah.
And it worked. It wasn't yet a musical.
True.
And so it was in fitting with the sort of the semi-realistic nature of the film, but for some bizarre reason. I mean, again, like we say, you're not going to get out of this film alive if you don't put the two classic songs into it. And I Want to Talk Like You had to be in there.
And
so suddenly, for one song, it was a song and dance number, it was a musical, and it didn't work.
I think one of the things is because Christopher Walken has a certain menace, I think, you know, has a certain menace to his voice, that also jarred with your memory of what the song was about. That's interesting. I thought the what about the young lad?
Oh, Neil Sethi.
Yeah, he's only lovely. I think 11-ish or so. I think he did a really good job.
He did a phenomenal job. Yeah, it's absolutely delightful. Yes, I mean, do bear in mind for the entire film, he is the only actual live action creature on the screen.
Yes. It's a lot on his shoulders.
He carried the entire film, didn't he?
He did. I think he did it really well. Very engaging. I think they... one thing I noted, I remembered the end of the animated film of 67, and they did a different end in this film.
A little bit, yes.
Little bit. I'm pretty sure in the 67 film, you see him... He strikes up a friendship with a young girl in a village, and they go off and hold hands or something along those lines. That's not where the path they follow. And I think there's already talk of a second film being mulled over as we speak.
Well, they need to be very careful with that, because Disney have already done a second Jungle Book. They did it back in 1994. And if you're not aware of it, then that's probably because, you know, we don't talk about it very much.
Okay.
I mean, oddly enough, I mean, the cast was phenomenal. I'm looking on IMDb right now. It had Sam Neill. It had John Cleese.
Right.
It had Lena Headey, Cersei from Game of Thrones.
Ah, yes, yes. Wow.
Those people were all in it, but no one ever talks about that because, you know, for obvious reasons. But yeah, the original, the slice of joy that was the original was just exquisite. They chased off the dragon. The dragon. I'm not on Game of Thrones anymore. Am I? I'm sorry. The tiger.
The tiger.
Shere Khan. They chased off, you know, in a slightly more grisly fashion this way. Let's not go into too much detail here.
Yeah,
but they did for Shere Khan.
Yes.
Mercifully, they dispensed with the vultures.
True.
Which was probably just as well, because the four vultures who weren't the Beatles in the first one,
That's right, the mop tops. They had mop tops, didn't they?
They did, and something was meant to be a Scouse accent, but obviously wasn't.
Okay, well,
and also Scarlett Johansson shows up in this new version. Now there's a waste of talent for you.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I mean, I think her voice fitted Car rather well. I thought again as a sort of slimy menace and hissing threat, but yeah, we could have seen a bit more of her. But it was quite a well played scene. But
she was in there for one scene. It was almost like a box was ticked.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just trying to remember from the original how much was there much more of Car in the original animated film.
So it comes in and out. Even has sings "Trust in Me."
Oh yes.
And then you have that wonderful, exquisite exchange with Shere Khan. I don't have time for that nonsense. You can see I'm a fan here. I remember this.
Yeah, very well.
Way better than a grown man has any business remembering it.
Oh, not at all. So, Mr. McCabe, would you buy a ticket again? Would you recommend someone buy a ticket?
I would, but I definitely had the caveat, this is not the old Jungle Book. You need to go in with your eyes open, with an open mind, ready to watch a new film. If you can do that, absolutely go and see it.
Yeah, I agree. It's visually absolutely spectacular. Lots of action, quite a lot of humour, and just if you're of a certain generation, you can't help but harken back to something that came before. Okay, so that's the Jungle Book.
Oh man, this is really living.
Very good. Another film which was full of special effects and action, but pitched at a slightly different audience.
Oh, yes.
To put it mild. Well, yeah, actually, yes.
Well, there's nothing mild about this film, is there?
No, we're talking about the latest installment, and it is an installment, in the Marvel Comics... Well, actually, it's called the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Steve.
Isn't it?
MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe. The latest one is Captain America Civil War.
Now, are you a resident of that universe, Simon?
Look, I have to say that I am. And again, I'm showing my... Should I be saying that at the man of my years? But
Why not?
I did grow up with these comics for a long time. I was quite into them because I was really keen on drawing when I was a kid. So I actually used to draw them till the cows came home. And I mean, even at one time in my teens, I even thought about taking up a career as a graphic artist. That's how much I was into all that sort of stuff. So they stayed with me, and I've revisited some of them in more recent years. So I'm pretty familiar with the characters and some of the major stories that run through the comic world. And this is, you've got to remind ourselves here, Steve, this is in the cinematic sense, this is the 13th film in this cinematic interpretation of this comics company, which started way back in the 60s. So it's been around for decades.
So this is the 13th milking of the cash cow.
And that's just of this company. This is Marvel Studios. There have been other companies have done Spider-Man and X-Men and other. So they've been mining this cultural mine. I've got myself into a...
I was terrified you were about to say
a
gold.
A cul-de-sac there.
I was afraid you were going to say gold mine, and I would have had to give you a hard time because, many things this is, but it's not a gold mine.
So basically, in all these films, the characters and the plot lines are largely drawn from the comics.
Yes.
And so here we've got this Civil War is all about what degree of oversight and control should a group of superpowered beings be under as they go about the business of protecting the world. And the film, in a kind of a modern sort of way, says, well, sure, these guys and women are running around trying to save lives, but even in the course of that, doing that, sometimes, even with the best of intentions, innocent people die.
Yes.
So you've got one group led by Captain America says, no, they must operate independently. And the other faction, basically led by Iron Man, Tony Stark, says, no, we need to have some control. So, I mean, that actually sounds rather dry and political and ethical, but it is a 2.5-hour action film. There is a lot of action, some humour. I could have had a bit more humour. And there are even more characters, even more new characters they introduce, notably Black Panther, who's a long-time character in this universe. So a lot would depend on how familiar you are with the previous films in the comic book, Steve. So for me, because I was familiar, I sit there and I'm absorbing a lot of stuff that makes sense. But are you coming to this with that backlog of information?
No, I'd seen the first Captain America film from about 3 years ago, I think it was, the origin story of Captain America. And I was vaguely aware that there were other characters of that ilk. But I didn't know details. And so with the opening sequence set in Lagos, Nigeria, which has them doing some sort of covert mission, which isn't very covert when you're running around with a great big Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shell thing on your back that's got a big star in the middle of it. It's not terribly covert.
No, it's not.
But nevertheless, they're doing this mission, and from the beginning, you're saying, okay, I think that's this person. Okay, I think I know what's going on here, and it's very definitely, as you say, it's an installment. If I were to turn on, I don't know, halfway through the fourth series of Game of Thrones and expect someone who'd never seen it before to figure out who the hell Tyrion was, they'd be totally confused. And it would take most of the episode to sort of make sense of the world they've just been dropped into. That's the experience I had watching Captain America : Civil War. I had to try and dredge up some form of schema into which I could fit things. So that was my experience of the first, I don't know, half an hour of the film.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that you're absolutely right. There's a huge amount of layering in back referencing in the script.
That's
actually
nice way of putting it, yeah.
Where they refer to what's happened before, and so yeah, maybe that's being done to try and bring a newish audience up to speed, because it would be bloody confusing if you just, as you say, dropped in. The other thing was for the people who are really into this thing, they make some references there. I noticed one or two. To the comic world, the comic backstory. Do you remember at one point in a battle, this film's only just come out, I shouldn't give too much away, but anyway, Spider-Man lifts something.
Yep.
And that is a very potent reference to a famous comic strip from way back in the 60s where he lifts something. And if you're wondering why the Scarlet Witch and the android red-skinned Vision spend a bit of time together, that's also a major plot line that runs through the comics for many, many years. So they do these little clever little references for people who know even more than what's been presented so far in the films. I thought it was of a similar high standard in terms of the production and the pulling it all together as the previous films. I have seen the previous films, so it all sort of flowed pretty well. I like the fact that they do try and bring some humour in, because it gets a bit serious sometimes.
Oh, but doesn't it?
But Spider-Man and Ant-Man in particular are welcome light relief, I thought. They did that really well.
There is a scene where Spider-Man is first introduced. We won't go into too much detail here, obviously.
Yeah.
But that first scene where we meet Spider-Man indirectly is actually quite sweetly done.
It is, yeah. They did a nice touch. And I think one thing I'd be interested in your take on, Steve, because the characters, as I say, drawn from the original ones. So in the original ones, just as it is, Captain America is all very good, but he's very goody-goody, and he's a bit boring. And do you think they've managed somehow to flesh him out a little bit, or is he just still too good for his own good?
Well, see, I was willing to write that off as Chris Evans just not having the depth to pull off the character. My thought coming out of it was this was not a Captain America film. It was, at best, it was an Avengers film, and possibly really an Iron Man film.
Yeah, well, it is definitely an Avengers film. It's interesting that they called it Captain America: Civil War, but because there are strands coming through from the previous Captain America films. This guy called the Winter Soldier, with the metal arm. So that's all from the previous Captain America film. So in terms of the story, perhaps you could justify it. But yes, you've got pretty much they're all there, aren't they? With like only a couple of exceptions. So,
well, they do make reference to the fact that the Hulk's not there, and neither is Thor.
Yes,
it's almost as though there's a roll call at one point. And they point out that those two are absent from the discussions of the Sokovia Accords, this new protocol that's going to limit their behaviour. And they do mention specifically that Thor and Banner aren't there.
Yeah.
But let's face it, Robert Downey Jr. owns this film.
Well, okay, I think that's probably fair. He's really that actor is, well, this is like the fifth or sixth film he's played this character.
Yes,
something like that. He's been in 3 Iron Man films, 2 Avengers films, and now he's in another one. So he totally, the world would know him as this guy. And yeah, he's clever, he's wisecracking, he's got a lot more pathos to him than the rather bland Captain America. And also we learn more about his backstory and his family, and Steve, just compare that for a little bit with, say, something like, Batman and Superman, which we talked about a few weeks ago, you think there's much of a difference in the way they try and flesh out the realness of the person playing the superhero. Is there much of a difference between the two rival companies in your mind, coming into this as a bit of an outsider?
I think, first of all, if I have to watch either of them, and I'm not a monstrous fan of either franchise, the genres leave me a little bit cold, but Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, was oppressive and plodding and dull.
Okay.
I'd say that Captain America Civil War was an hour too long, but at least it was entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't let up. There weren't too many yawns. But what I would say is, I'll lead you through this one, shall I? What was Batman's big objection to Superman during Batman versus Superman?
That he would be out of control and do more harm than good.
And what was Superman's concern about Batman?
The same.
That he was a vigilante.
He's a vigilante.
And indeed, the Avengers are referred to as vigilantes in Captain America: Civil War. Have you noticed, incidentally?
Yep, that's true.
We don't do chapter numbers anymore. We do subtitles. This isn't Captain America 3. It's now Captain America: Civil War. So basically, there's huge parallels between the two films.
Yes, and that's true. And the Civil War one, the Marvel one, that's drawn on a comic story of about, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 7, or 8 years ago. That was a major story in the actual comics.
Right.
But just for as a matter of interest. So they didn't steal it from Batman, Superman. It had been around for a while. But nevertheless, you're right. Hey, just one thing. You talked about the installment. I've done some little bit of research here, Mr. McCabe.
Because that's what we do. We're consummate professionals.
Yeah. So I said this was the 13th film.
Yep.
The previous 12, according to the website Box Office Mojo, and I used my calculator here, the previous 12 films have grossed more than $9 billion at the worldwide box office. That's a lot of money. And they have projected to make, there's one more Marvel film this year, and then two in next year, two the year after that, and three the year after that. So they have basically, they're rolling out this massive schedule of films. It's like an old-fashioned film company, isn't it? A studio that just has a cast of characters and they just keep churning them out. So there's a lot riding on this. There's a lot of money and a lot of jobs riding on it too. Do you ever stick around and see the credits of these things?
There's always a little after credits bit, isn't there?
Yeah. The Marvel's become known for that now.
But you know that you've got about 10 minutes of credits.
Yeah, I know. Both the films we're talking about, Jungle Book and this Captain America film, massive amount of CGI.
Yeah.
And just as an interest, I gave up trying to count. It's impossible. But then each film would have had hundreds of computer visual artists working on them. And in fact, when you look at, as this credits scroll down, you realise there's so much of this CGI work, no one company can do it.
No.
And they often have 5 or 6 or 7 companies all contributing to get the work done.
It's an astonishing undertaking, isn't it?
Yeah, and I suppose it's providing jobs, Steve.
It is. I mean, it is an industry in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
What disappoints me about it, though, I'm going to take the contrary view here a little bit, it means that the studios are getting lazy. They know what works, and they can either take their chance on something new and creative and innovative. And I took your advice, and I went to see The Hunt for the Wilder People last weekend.
Oh, yes.
And oh, dear Lord, I was glad I did.
Yeah.
One of the most extraordinarily delightful and exquisite and joyful films I've seen in I don't know how long.
There you go.
But the thing is, it's not got the pedigree, and it's not got the gold seal, and it's got not the guaranteed this is going to make a million that a Marvel film's got on it. So a studio that's got the choice between taking a gamble on a Wilder People or taking a sure thing like Captain America, they're just going to crank out another Captain America. And yes, it makes absurd amounts of money. And let's face it, studios are businesses, and that's what businesses do. And this is the demise of Western civilization happening before our very eyes. and viva the revolution. But what it means is that when it's a choice between creativity and profit, unfortunately, what we're seeing is profit's going to win every single time.
Mm. But, as you say, and the good thing about The Hunt for the Wilder People, it's just... it doesn't need CGI. It's just got an interesting story, great characters, great script. Hey, what more do you want? It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, I mean, The Hunt for the Wilder People told a story and then went home, as it should. Captain America, by the end of it, I'm thinking, oh, for God's sake, not another character. Please. Okay, no, put the aeroplane down. Stop fighting, please, enough already. I don't need somebody else to suddenly step up to the mix and start throwing things at people. I just wanted it to end. But,
yes,
I mean, it was an entertaining ride as it went along, but it outstayed its welcome.
Yeah, and that must be one of the big questions that all the people behind this are wondering. Okay, they're projected to do all these other films, but at what point will people start to lose interest? So the whole thing of how much do you stretch it out is an interesting question. Oh, now, Steve,
yeah.
in our time-honoured tradition here on Crave,
oh, yeah,
of drawing a link between two separate pieces of work...
Oh, dear, go on, let's hear it.
I have a contribution... So, the director of The Jungle Book...
John Favreau,
was the director of of Iron Man.
Yes.
The first of the four Marvel Cinematic movies, that back in 2008. So there
yes.
you go.
Yes, he was. Yeah, I mean, clearly this is a safe pair of hands for films like this. This is a man who knows what he's doing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he did a good job.
And also, if we're taking the easy route, Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, yeah. Now, she was in the... so I'm sure, God, I'm a nerd. She was in the second Iron Man film, not the first.
No, but she was in Captain America.
True.
The Black Widow.
Yes, that's right. Yes. And he was acting in that. Yes, you're right. Yes.
And again, somewhat underused in my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's face it. I mean, I was fortunate. I got a press ticket for this one. Would you buy a ticket for this?
For this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. But again, I've sort of got swept up in it because it's brought all back my childhood memories. So I'm keen to go along for the ride. But if you're not into superhero movies, I guess you probably wouldn't bother because there's so much catching up to do at this point. The 13th film in, you've got a lot of you got a lot of work to do to go back and catch up with the story. But
it's not one to win new converts, is it?
Oh, probably not. No. It might confuse new watchers if you're not familiar with the backstory. Anyway, So just a reminder, this is Crave. He's Steve McCabe. I'm Simon Mercer. We get together and we talk about movies and films and music. Speaking of music, we should talk about some music.
We should indeed.
Now, I remember last time you were quite enthusiastic at the prospect of catching one of the great names in sort of heavy metal music, Iron Maiden.
Yeah, I was. That was last weekend at the Vectra Arena. I was really excited at the thought of seeing it.
And?
Well, I bet they weren't that good, really. This is not in any way sour grapes, not in the slightest.
No.
I requested a photo pass and a review pass from the promoters, and I was told that that Crave weren't going to get press credentials because only 5 outlets in New Zealand were going to get credentialed. So if only 5 did and we didn't, you know what that means, don't you?
Oh, I can do my math.
Yep. We are the 6th most influential entertainment commentary outlet in New Zealand. We are number 6 and proud of it.
Oh, I think that's a remarkable achievement.
In less than a year, we're number 6. We'll take it, eh?
Yeah, we'll take that, and we'll. Goodness knows we'll be in 12 months' time.
Now, I gather that it was a very good show.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know because I wasn't there. But to be fair, when I saw over Facebook people saying, oh, this is like a bucket list event, I'm finally getting to see Iron Maiden, and I was very good. I didn't put on in a reply to everyone's Facebook posts, I bet they weren't as good as when I saw them in 1983.
Ooh.
Which is a bit of pulling rank, I know, but...
Yes, 83, jeez.
83 at the Manchester Apollo, when Bruce Dickinson was still the new singer. And I went back and I had to listen to some of their old stuff with Bruce Dickinson that night when all my friends were posting photos from the show on Facebook, and I was feeling a bit of fear of missing out. And I had to listen to songs like The Trooper and Run to the Hills, and I thought, yeah, I'm not missing anything. They did 2 phenomenal albums with Paul Di'Anno singing, their first 2 albums, Iron Maiden and Killers, and I've been listening to those a lot in the car just recently. They've held up well. The moment Paul Di'Anno got kicked out after Killers, they lost it, and frankly, I don't think I missed very much.
Ah, okay.
But not sour grapes at all, honestly.
Not complaining.
No. No, I didn't get to see music this week, Simon, but you saw 21 Pilots, didn't you?
I did, and I have posted this on the website, and I this was a very interesting experience for me because I'm, in my mid and so I've been, one of the things I've enjoyed about the work we've done, Steve, and is to see some newer bands that I might have heard of but not particularly familiar with. And I remember last year we went to see Hozier, which I thought he was fantastic.
Yes.
And this is 21 Pilots talking about, a couple of guys out of Cleveland, Ohio. And it's a similar thing. I'm really not that familiar with them. Clearly very popular. Got several albums under their belt. Youngish audience at the Victor Arena. And I really was blown away. I thought they were fantastic. I was... down on the ground floor, so I wasn't looking down, so I may have missed one or two things, but I've certainly felt the atmosphere there. They packed out the Victor. They presented, a really well crafted, thought out, inventive, challenging show. I mean, I guess if you're of my generation, and you've been to lots of concerts, you're used to bands, they'll mix things up a little bit, but they sing a song, then they'll sing another song, and they might have a sing-along with the audience, and there might be a bit of chit-chat. I thought the way this was structured was really interesting in that they would do things like not even sing a whole song.
Oh, yeah?
Like, just do, I don't know, felt like they did like maybe a third of a song and mm-hmm. then just stop and just do something else.
Oh, okay.
I think they're quite well known for doing, before I go on to that. I mean, so basically we're talking about, they're kind of, I think they've been referred to as an indie pop with a bit of, I suppose it's indie pop, indie pop, modern pop, a fair bit of, how would I say, rapping, a bit of pop, rap, rock,
yeah, a bit of everything, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's just two of them. There's just these two guys. There's Josh Dunn on the drums and Tyler Joseph. He sings and he does plays a variety of instruments from the ukulele to the keyboard to the bass guitar. So there's a lot of backing track, which you might think could be a detraction, but it actually isn't at all. It's all fabulously coordinated with a very impressive video wall behind them. And they've got a wonderful theatrical quality to their work. The opening song, they're in silhouette. There's a microphone dangling from a cable from the ceiling, which Tyler Joseph sings into. Josh Dunn is a very muscular, athletic, and expressive drummer. I wrote on the website I was impressed by his backflip off an instrument. I spoke to a friend not long ago who said, drummers do that all the time. But I don't know if they do. Do you see many drummers do backflips? I can't imagine
I forget
Keith
the last
Moon
time I
was doing one. But
well, not anymore, no.
But
so, certainly not Charlie Watts.
No. And they did some really interesting things. And I wonder, there was almost an acrobatic, theatrical element to it. It's not artists doing crowd surfing is nothing new.
No.
But at one point, the vocalist, it looked like, for example, I was standing at floor level, remember, it looked like he walked out into the crowd.
Oh, yeah?
So he was being held up on his feet. Now, there may have been specially arranged people to help him do that in advance, probably there were, but that was quite a nice effect. And then towards the end, a similar thing happened where all of a sudden you saw a mini drum kit being held up by the crowd.
Oh, how fantastic.
And the drummer actually goes out and plays a little bit of drums while the crowd's all around him. So that was a lovely lovely moment. And at one point he's playing the drums, he stops, picks up a trumpet, plays a bit of trumpet, and then goes back to the drums. So for me, not being so familiar with their act, there was a lot new and fresh. The audience knew the material very well and sang along with it. And Tyler Joseph was almost orchestrating a massive choir often. It was a wonderful, inclusive performance. And I thought they did a really, really good job. And there was one cover, Steve.
Yes.
From Mr. Elvis Presley, no less, or his version of Can't Help Falling in Love.
Oh, not a song you'd expect to hear within that genre.
No. And what's more, played it on a ukulele.
No, I did not see that coming.
No. But again, it was only maybe a half the song.
So as you say, for a gentleman of your years, who's definitely in your mid, would you rocking out with the youth of Auckland?
Yes.
Glad you went?
Absolutely. I absolutely am. I think even if you don't think you're a fan of the more modern pop or rap or hip hop, they are such wonderful performers and so energetic. I think you really, really enjoy it. I was thoroughly glad I went to see them, and I've had my eyes open to what good quality new music is coming through, or music relatively new. And so it's a great. I recommend you see them if they ever come back.
No, sure. There you go. This is the power of Crave. It's keeping us young.
Yeah. There's an imposition in my mind's imagination. I hope when they talk, I'm smoking, cause I'm smoking them like a basement. This is not rap, this is not hip hop. Just another attempt to make the voices stop. Rapping to prove nothing, just writing to say something. Cause I wasn't the only one who wasn't rushing to say nothing. This doesn't mean I lost my dream. It's just right now, I got a really crazy mind to clean.
Incidentally, you mentioned Keith Moon. I just have to tell you, did you hear what happened during the planning of the opening ceremony for the London Olympics in 2012?
No, tell me.
Bill Kerbishley, who was the manager of The Who, was approached to see if Keith Moon would be available to play alongside Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey. And apparently he emailed back saying, Keith now resides in Golders Green Crematorium. If we have a round table, sunglasses and a candle, we might get hold of him.
Brilliant.
Absolutely superb. So there's some people whose memory will just live on in music forever.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Ah,
so, yes. So you'd go again, would you, 21 Pilots next time they come around?
I'd go 21 Pilots because it'd be fascinating to see the next time around what they do with their show.
Yes.
This was really a show. It was not a traditional concert. It had a different feel about it.
Yep.
It took you to a different type of entertainment. So I thought that was really, really well done. I'd highly recommend you go and see them if you get the chance.
Sounds brilliant.
Right, so...
That's the last couple of weeks. We'll have a quick look at what's coming up in the near future.
Yeah, what is... Okay, tell me.
Well, let's see. We've got Seth Rogen's new... Well, not... Yeah, I had a quick rant before about the absence of new films, and yet we're looking forward to a sequel. Bad Neighbours 2. Did you see the first Bad Neighbours film?
I don't think I went to the cinema to see it. I've seen excerpts of it online, so I'm pretty familiar with what it would be like. And I think I've seen a trailer for this one. So it's a kind of an American... it's a little bit like... I'm thinking of John Belushi in Animal House. It's kind of that updated for the 21st century, isn't it?
It is. It's like that for our generation because we...
Yeah.
Because the whole frat house kind of comedy was very much for people who were of that age at that time.
Mm.
And those people are now our age. And so it's kept up to date, hasn't it? Yeah. So
yes.
Now, apparently the shtick in this one is the first time round a fraternity moved in next door. This time, it's a sorority has moved in next door. See what they did there? A clever, creative, and innovative twist. and unfortunately, I've seen the trailer for this so many times, I think I can recite it.
Yeah. They've done it to death, yeah.
Yeah, but it still looks entertaining. So we've got that coming up in a couple of weeks. Now, do you remember The Runaways?
Are we talking about a band?
Bubblegum rock... that hair band from the 1970s, Cherie Curry, Joan Jett, people like that.
Joan Jett, yes, but okay. No, I'm not so familiar with The Runaways, but are they coming?
Cherie Curry, who was a runaway, is coming for the first time to New Zealand in about 2 weeks' time. She's playing Auckland's King's Arms on the 20th.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Yeah, Crave will be there to cover that one, definitely.
Fantastic. Oh, good.
She's also heading down to Wellington and Christchurch over the next couple of days after that.
Okay.
Full details of that on the website, obviously. Now, I don't know where you stand on urban music, Simon.
Ooh. Well, is that... Okay.
this is not my choice of phrase. This is how it's being advertised.
Yeah. Well, see, depending on where you've come from, that might mean non-melodic, but I'm sure that's not true. But, I'm not so hugely familiar with it, but that does, as I've now discovered, I should have my eyes and ears open to new things. So... is there some big event coming from that regard?
There is indeed. It's your rap, your hip-hop, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The Block Party, which is being billed as New Zealand's premier urban music festival, is at the ASB Showgrounds in Auckland on the 20th of May, so it's just a couple of weeks away.
Oh, wow.
We should have coverage of that, I hope.
Yes.
Lady Hawk is going to be touring New Zealand in July. And also, now here's a name from the past for you, Lulu and Leo Sayer.
Oh, that, God, that's the long, dim past.
Isn't it?
Leo, Lulu, gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
Apparently still alive.
She's not doing a Keith Moon. Okay, good. Coming here.
Civic in Auckland on June the 26th.
Mm.
Yeah, I know.
Testing.
Now, not coming here, unfortunately, but we have to mention this. I don't know if you heard about this. The big music festival of possibly ever.
Oh, I know the one you mean, the desert one.
Desert Trip, yeah.
Desert Trip, yep.
Yeah, Woodstock Part 2.
With ticket prices to match for the 21st century, I'm sure they are.
Ticket prices start apparently $200 for a day pass, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a gathering up of those still standing of a certain generation, right?
Yeah, apparently it's going to be the first night of the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan.
Yep.
Both playing full-length shows, apparently.
Wow.
You know, neither's supporting the other. They're both going to do full sets.
Okay.
Then there's going to be, I forget the exact running order, there's going to be The Who, obviously, minus Keith Moon.
Yes.
Paul McCartney, Roger Waters, Neil Young.
Wow. Some big hitters.
Yeah. No Bruce Springsteen.
No.
He's too young, I think.
Yeah, he's only about 66 or 67, I think.
Yes, exactly.
I think he's touring in Europe, just about to be, so that might be why he couldn't front up. But, Fair enough. That'll be...
It'll be incredible. I mean, I have written asking for press passes, and the answer is almost certainly going to be, you've got to be kidding us. But, you know, hey, you waste the electrons, don't you? I mean, this is old men.
Oh, yeah, it is old men. It is.
Ron Wood will be the youngest man on stage.
How old is he? God, 60, how old is he?
60, he's the only one who's not in his 70s. He's 68.
Wow.
Yeah, he'll be the youngest person on stage for this show. Now, given the way that 2016 has started, there's no guarantee all these people will still be alive in October.
No. It's been a bit of a run of it, hasn't it?
It's a concern, isn't it? I mean, we shouldn't let the podcast finish without a quick mention of Prince.
No, especially as your Debbie went to see him and gave us a fantastic report of that show in Auckland. I suppose she's feeling now what a wonderful opportunity that I grabbed it when I could.
That she's pretty much used those exact words, yeah. Deep in mourning.
Yeah.
And very, 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 I don't know what the word is, pleased that she was there when she could.
Yeah. So we've had...
Go ahead.
So I'm just thinking, we've had Prince, we've had David Bowie, we've had Glenn Frey from the Eagles this year.
Lemmy.
Lenny.
Alan Rickman.
Oh, true. Yeah.
And it's only May.
People die. It happens.
Well, when people of that age die, and like I say, you know, I don't know what the odds are of every single member of those six acts showing up in October, but it's not looking good.
No. Gosh. Whew. All right, then. Hey, so I think we've had a good chat.
Not bad.
Yeah. So unless there's something else to add by way of a postscript, I think we might draw the curtain on this little episode.
I think they've heard enough, haven't they?
I think they have. Got to keep them coming back for more. So if you want to get in touch with us, Steve and me, Simon, first of all, you can email us. We're very pleased to hear from you. The email address is podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook, increasingly people are doing, or you can follow us on Twitter @CravePodcast.
So there you go. I'm Simon Mercer.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week.